Okay, we're starting here from the bottom of Hayamud Bet by the two dots. Ezu Katan, Kol She'enu Yochol Yochovak Teifo Shel Aviv. A machloket between Beit Shemai and Beit Hillel in the Mishnah as to what classifies a child as a Katan She'igia L'chinuch. Beit Shemai says as long as he can ride on his father's shoulders, whereas Beit Hillel says he has to hold his father's hand and walk up to the Mikdash. Matkifla Rabbi Zera. Ad Hocha Manachir. How did he get there? The Mishnah only requires him to go from Yerushalayim up to Harabayit in order to qualify for a Katan that is Roi L'chinuch. These aren't people necessarily that live in Yerushalayim. The Katan had to be brought until that point in Yerushalayim. Why isn't that a qualification in terms of bringing him to Yerushalayim? Why don't we say if he could walk up to Yerushalayim, then that would be a Katan Shechigia L'chinuch. If he can't get to Yerushalayim, then what's the point of talking about going from Yerushalayim up to Harabayit? The qualification should be a much broader qualification rather than simply about moving Yerushalayim to Harabai. It should be getting from home to Yerushalayim. If he's not in Yerushalayim, then what's there to talk about? Amar le'Abai, ad hocha demichayve imei besimcha. His mother, who is obligated in the mitzvah of simcha, aitite imei. His mother brought him up. Mikan v'leilech im yachol le'alot v'lechoz b'yado shel aviv mirushalayim le'harabayit chayav. From that point forward, if he can hold his father's hand and walk up to Harabayit, then he's chayav. Below, patur. If not, he is patur. So here you have something interesting. The mother has a din that she is chayavet in simcha. We know before that she's paturah from the chagigah. She's paturah from the ri'iyah. But by simcha, she is chayavet. Number two is, the Gemara's assumption is that a child can travel with his mother at a much younger age than with his father. So if it was his mother that brought him up, which is Abaye's point, then that threshold is much lower because the mother could bring him even when he is a much smaller child. Forget about the father who needs a certain threshold, whether it means going on his shoulders, whether it means holding his hand. The mother could do it even from a younger age. So that's what the Gemara wants to understand here. How did this young child get here that this is the qualification? The Gemara says it came with his mother. Well, if it came with his mother, why doesn't he keep going up with his mother? And that would mean that even a smaller, a younger child could go up to the Harabayit. The answer, the Gemara says, is because his mother is only obligated in Simcha. The obligation of his mother in Simcha only requires her to go to Yerushalayim. Does not require her to be Ole the Harabayit, because she's not Chayevet in Re'iyah, she's not Chayevet in Chagigah. As far as her mitzvah b'simcha, it's also not clear. Rashi, in other places in Shas, quotes the Gemara in Psachim, that says that what's the simcha? B'mem samcha. How are you misameach the woman? And there it talks about buying her jewelry, buying her new clothing. So Tosafot, in a number of places, Rabbeinu Tam says he doesn't understand Rashi. That's true post-Churban. But Bizman Beit HaMikdash, the woman has an equal obligation in terms of Shalmei Simcha. That the only ain't simcha ela b'basar. The only simcha is b'basar shlamim. So he differentiates in the Gemara and Yoma and other places. Rabbeinu Tam says it makes a difference as to whether the woman may not be chayavet herself to bring a shlamim. Her husband is chayav to provide for her a shlamim. And so she has to be there in Yerushalayim. It's really her husband's mitzvah. It's her husband's mitzvah to ensure that she eats from the shalmei simcha that he brought. So she has to facilitate that by being present in Yerushalayim. So that's why she's coming up to Yerushalayim. As far as going up to the Harabayit, she's no longer involved. This brings up a broader question about chinuch, which is, upon whom is the obligation of chinuch? From this Gemara, it sounds like that the woman is a participant in the mitzvah of chinuch, because she's the one who brought him from the bayit all the way until Yerushalayim, because she's chayevet v'simcha. So there are rishonim who believe that the woman does not have an obligation with regards to chinuch. The obligation is only on the father to do chinuch. There are some instances in the Gemara where we see that a woman is mechanech the child. They say that all is when the father is absent. In the absence of the father, the woman is chayevet in the mitzvah of chinuch. But without that, the woman is not chayevet. So our Gemara over here just means the woman is coming up anyway to Yerushalayim. She can bring the child with her. The father doesn't have to be involved. It's not an issue of chinuch. Just an issue the mother will bring the child to Yerushalayim because she's coming anyway. Then when we talk about chinuch, that's the issue of going from Yerushalayim to Harabayit. There are others, like Rashi, who suggest that the obligation devolves upon both the mother and the father. That parents are chayav in the mitzvah of chinuch of their child. Now, that might not be completely so. It might be only so for mitzvot that women are chayavot in. And not only mitzvot that women are chayavot in, but mitzvot that they participate in. Because if it's just chayavot, then over here it may not be enough. Because the mitzvah of simcha over here, she's not necessarily obligated. She has to facilitate the ability of her husband to provide for her shami simcha. So she's a participant in the mitzvah, an obligatory mitzvah, but she's not necessarily the driver of the obligatory mitzvah. There she may also have a din of chinuch. But in a mitzvah where she's completely ptura, and if she opted in, it would be a voluntary mitzvah. Over there, maybe she may not have a mitzvah of chinuch, or for extra credit mitzvah. She doesn't necessarily have a mitzvah of chinuch there. So as far as all the Rishonim are concerned, if there's no father, the mother is definitely chayavet in the mitzvah of chinuch. If the father is present, there's machloket in the Rishonim as to whether the woman is absolved of any obligation whatsoever, or she is at least chayavet in mitzvot that she is chayavin, or mitzvot that she participates in. So that's the machloket HaRishonim here, and this Gemara plays a pivotal role in that, because here you see a woman doing the chinuch, in a sense, bringing him up for the mitzvah of simcha. Or, again, you could just read it that she's simply bringing him because the whole family is coming and she's bringing him along. The only question of chinuch starts from that point forward, where she's no longer obligated to take him up to Har HaBayit. So that's when the question really arrives about the father's role, because the terms of her taking him to Yerushalayim to Har HaBayit, it's not relevant for her to do that. Why isn't it relevant? She's not chayevet in the mitzvah. So all the Rishonim seem to agree that if she's not chayevet at all in the mitzvah, that she can't be obligated to provide the chinuch in that case. I'd say this, the explanation of the question is really more stark or pronounced according to Rashi, who believes the obligation of chinuch devolves upon the parents and not on the child itself. So that's where the question is much more right, obvious. By Tosafot, who thinks that the obligation's on the child himself, then the parents' involvement is not because they're quote-unquote obligating chinuch. The obligation of chinuch devolves upon the child himself. So then the parents are just ensuring that he does what he is obligated to do. Over there, the woman might have more participation or more ability because she's just, again, a facilitator like the father is. So I think, according to the Balei Tosfot, I think the question is less pronounced versus Rashi, where the obligation really devolves upon the parent. Which parent does it devolve upon? And the common denominator between the Rishonim is, if you're not chayavet in a mitzvah or not chayavet in a mitzvah, it's questionable whether you can be the one who leads the chinuch in that case. Mikan ve'elech, im yachol le'alot v'lechoz v'edo shel aviv Yerushalayim na'ar ha'bayit, chayav v'yelo patur. So the woman, the mother brought him up to Yerushalayim. Then we kick in the question of whether he can make it from Yerushalayim up to Har HaBayit. Now, Heshiv Rabbi, Tachat Beit Hillel. So Rabbi stepped in on behalf of Beit Hillel to question the position of Divrei Beit Shammai. Question the position of Beit Shammai. It says by Chana, in the beginning of Shmuel Aleph, the Haftorah for Rosh Hashanah, it says, B'chana lo alata. After the birth of Shmuel, Chana no longer goes up with her husband Elkanah to Shiloh on the Regalim. Ki amra li isha, she says to her husband, Adi gamel anar v'oviotiv. Until he grows up, until he's weaned, I will not go up there, and then I will bring him. Because at that point, I'm going to leave him there forever. So really, the Pashtura Pasuk is she doesn't want to go, because once she goes, he's staying, and she's not coming back. Right, it's a one-way trip. But Shmuel, the Acholu Kov Aktefo Shel Aviv Ava, by the time you're weaned, it's about 24 months. For the Gemara, the Baruch uses the word Igamel to mean 24 months. So at that point, he could already have ridden on his father's shoulders. If that's the case, why didn't his father take him? Because he was obligated to be Mechanechim in Aliyah L'Regel. According to Beit Hillel, it's fine, because he says he has to be able to walk with his father's hand. Two-year-old probably would not make it up. Could be, but unlikely that he makes it up to Har HaBayit with the father. But riding on the shoulders, that for sure he could do. Amrulei Abaye, or Avua, whoever answers Rabbi on behalf of Beit Shammai, Vili Tamech, Tichshelecha, Chana Gufa, Milo Mechaiva B'Simcha. What about Chana herself? Isn't she obligated to be there because of the mitzvah of Simcha? Elchana Mifankuta Yeterta Chazi Bebi Shmuel. She saw that Shmuel was of a delicate consistency, and therefore, Bechasha Bebi Shmuel, the Chusha de Orcha, and she was worried about the traveling would weaken him, would cause him to fall ill, and therefore she felt it was inappropriate for her to go up because she would have to take Shmuel, and Shmuel would have fallen ill possibly, and therefore she doesn't want to go up. So that's the reason, then there's nothing to talk about here. The exemption exists for the fact that he can't make it there. Since he can't make it there, there's nothing to talk about being mechanech him to take him up to Aliyah L'Regel. There's no reason. The reason she's staying back is for the same reason that he's not being taken up. It's because she needs to take care of him. Again, the Pashtut Pasuk is that she doesn't want to be up there until the time that she's going to leave him there. Babi Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon poses this question. In Mishpat Ner Mitzvah, I can say that it's Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. The question, if it's a question from a Tana or an Amora, but the question here is, Katan, Chiger, the Divrei Beit Shammai, Besuma, the Divrei Shnehem Ma'u. So this is more like an Amoraic type of question. That's probably why they changed it to Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish rather than Rabbi Shimon the Tana. But what happens in a case where you have a young child, a child that has reached the age of Chinuch, but the Divrei Beit Shammai, that he is a katan, chiger. He's a katan who has a problem with his walking. He's unable to walk on his own. So for Beit Hillel, it's not a question. There's no mitzvah chinuch because according to Beit Hillel, he has to be able to walk up with his holding his father's hand. That he can't do. But for Beit Shammai, who says he can go up on the shoulders, it doesn't really matter whether he's a chiger or not. V'suma l'divrei shnehem. And if he's blind according to both of them, what is the story? He can't walk up on his own. So in that case, and he will be patur in the end from Ri'iyah, then Mahu, what's the din? So Heichi Dami, what's the case here? The obvious question is, you'll be Mechanech HaKatan, you only be Mechanech HaKatan if in the end they're going to be performing this mitzvah when they are a gadol. So that's what they want to know. What's the case here? Ilema b'chiger sheni yocholit pashet v'suma sheni yocholit pateach. Talking about someone who is lame or has trouble walking, which will never be rectified, or a suma, blind person who will never overcome that disability. Hashta gadol patur katan mibay. In that case, even when he reaches of age, he will still be patur. Then there's no reason to be mechanechim. What's the point of mechanech? Someone who's going to be patur min ha mitzvot. Over here, Rashi says, what's the whole point of chinuch? Hello, ain chinuch katan elo kedel hanigo. She saruch achar min gogo shilik yagdil. It's just a matter of training an individual because a person, once they're trained in a certain manner, a certain way, they continue by default to act in that manner once they become of age. So the Diyah Chinuch is to already inculcate in them a certain nature or habit that will continue as they grow older until the point they reach a gadol. So therefore the mitzvah of Chinuch is only valuable if in the end he's going to end up doing this mitzvah. Why train him to do a mitzvah which he's not going to be chayav and he's not going to do in the end anyway? So here the Gemara calls it obvious. It's actually an interesting question with young girls. There are some poskim that young girls who end up in shul with their fathers, if it's the appropriate age, that they can still come to shul, whether the father should take the girl to kiss the Torah when the Torah is being put away or taken out. Because you're training the girl to kiss the Torah, something she's not going to be able to do. When she grows older, she's not going to be doing that. Are you really being mechanech her in something that they can do when they're older or not? So there are some poskim take a strong line against this and say that they shouldn't. And the girl shouldn't be kissing the Sefer Torah. Others say, look, it's not training them about kissing the Sefer Torah. It's training them about what's the proper conduct towards the Sefer Torah, proper conduct of kavod of the Torah. But in Machloket about this issue, which is there's a value in b'mechanech a child in something that in the end they are not going to do. The Gemara says, lo, tzricha, b'chiger she'acholit pashet, v'suma she'acholit pateach. It's a case where the problem could be resolved. It's just that eventually he will walk fine. And eventually, he will overcome whatever is inhibiting his ability to see now. So, Mai, what's the din? So, Rabbi says, in any case where a gadol would be obligated in the Torah, the katan gets chinuch. Any place that a gadol in this situation would be exempt, man midrabanan katan nami patur. So too, a katan midrabanan would also be exempted. So, in our case here, a katan, while he is a chiger, while he is a suma, had he been in that same circumstance when he was a gadol, he would be patur. So therefore, his current status would make him patur when he's a gadol, therefore you're patur from chinuch. Even though eventually this child will end up in a position where he will possibly be chayav when he gets older, when he reaches that point, then the mitzvah of chinuch will kick in. But as long as he is in a status by which when he was a gadol, he would be patur min doraita, then we don't grant mechanechim as a katan. There's no obligation to be mechanechim as a katan. And now the Gemara says, Beit Shammai Omrim, Ariyash Tei Kesel. We saw this in the Mishnah, Machlok between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, as to the Riyah and the Shalmei Chagigah. Beit Shammai says, the Riyah is Tei Kesef, whereas the Chagiga is a Ma Kesef, and Beit Hillel says the opposite way around, which is the Chagiga is Shtei Kesef, and the Ri'ya, the Ola, is one Ma Kesef. Tanu Banan, Beit Shemai, Omrim, Ri'ya Shtei Kesef, Chagiga Ma Kesef, Sheria Ola, Kula L'Gvoa. So this is what we discussed in the Mishnah. The reason that Beit Shemai favors the Ri'ya is because it's an Ola to Ri'ya versus a Shalmei Chagiga. An Ola is a Korban that goes totally to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Mashen came be Chagiga, which only goes a portion to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we're going to favor the Ola, which is completely Lashem. Ve'od, Matzinu Batzeret, Shiri Be'en HaKatuv Be'olot Yoter Mi'Bishlamim. And we find by Shavuot, in Parshat Emor, that the Torah says that there are many more Olot than Shlamim. It's the only place where in the Torah where we have Shalmei Tzibur, where Bnei Yisrael bring Shlamim. And over there, by the korbanot that are brought with the shtei alechem on Shavuot, in Parshat Emor, it says that you bring up 10 olot, 1 chatat, and 2 shlamim. So over there, there's 10 olot in the face of 2 shlamim. So you see, even in the case where you bring shlamim, the Torah favors olot and says bring more olot. So same thing over here, where the Torah is telling you bring both olot and shlamim, we're going to favor the olot over the shlamim. They have the opposite view, that we favor the shalamim of the chagiga over the ola of the riya. Why? She chagiga yeshlam lifnei adibur. Mashein came to riya. Number one was the chagiga. Shlamim were brought even before Mamad Har Sinai, even before we received the Torah, which is not true of the riya, the olot riya. Ve'od matzinu b'nisim, shiri ba'en akatu b'shlamim yoter mi b'olot. And we also find by the Nisiim in the Parshat Naso that when they bring their korbanot, they bring, at the end of the Parsha, gives you the total of everything they brought, gives you the total number of olot they brought, the total number of shlamim they brought. In terms of olot, they bring about 36 olot. In terms of shlamim, the number far exceeds that. It's like 180, huge amount of shlamim. So you see here again, when you have both olot and shlamim that are brought, you favor the shlamim. Okay, now we understand the position that he took. Please explain to us why he didn't accept Beit Shammai's opinion. He said, you say that we favor the Ola because it all goes to God. I'd much rather have the Shlamim because the Shlamim has two Achilot, which is both Mizbeach and Adam. Which again, I spoke about this in the Mishnah, is along the lines of personality of Beit Hillel, or what you would expect from Beit Hillel versus Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai favors Kulo LaHashem, everything goes to Hashem, and that's it. That's the better way to go. Beit Hillel says, no, if you can give some to Hashem, some to Adam, that's better. Then both are participants, not Kulo LaHashem, and that's what they say here. By Shlamim, everybody participates, so it's even better. But Deka Amart, Nelif Me'atzeret, and what, you can tell me, learn out from Shavuot, Danin Korban Yachid, Mi Korban Yachid. You learn out a korban of the individual, which the Ri'ya and the Chagiyara, from another korban the Yachid, which they claim is the Nisim. Vein danim korban Yachid mi korban Tzibur. You're not going to learn out a korban Yachid of Olat Ri'ya and Shalmei Chagiga from Atzeret, which is Shavuot, or those are all korbanot Tzibur. So Beit Shammai, my time, Elohim, make a Beit Hillel. Why doesn't Beit Shammai hold like Beit Hillel's position? The Karmat Chagiga Difa, the Yeshna Lifnei Dibur. You said that the Shlamim is better because Shlamim appears in the Torah before Matan Torah. Riya Nami Yeshlam Lifnei Dibur. Olot Riya also appear before the Dibur. I'm not really explaining this because the Gemara is going to come back and do a lot of work on this afterwards. And you said, let's learn out the Nisim. Danim Davar Shenoeg LeDorot. Davar Noeg LeDorot. We learn out from Atzeret, which applies forever. I mean, it applies even after that moment. We don't talk about Olat Riya and Shalmei Chagiga that are noeg forever, midavar shenu noeg ledorot, from the Nisim, which was a horat sha'a. It was just one-time event. So Mar says, now, Beit Hillel, maishna chagiga deyeshna lifnei adibur. Where does Beit Hillel know that the chagiga, the shlamim, were brought before the dibur? Dichtiv. Because it says in Perek Chavdalet. Perek Chavdalet is in the end of Parshat Mishpatim. Over there, it describes an event that took place at Har Sinai. There's a question amongst the Rishonim, how to explain that event and when it took place. Rashi, and Rashi here as well, on the Gemara, toes the line that Ein Mukdamu Mukhar Batorah, and that was found in Perek Chavdalet Mishpatim, really belongs to Perek Yutet in Shmot, which is in Yitro, leading up to Mamad Har Sinai. This is part of the preparations for Mamad Har Sinai. And he basically interweaves the two of them, based on the Midrash, that the two of them describe the entirety of the process before Matan Torah. And this fills in some of the missing pieces from Yutet are filled in Chavdala. That's the way Rashi learns. The Ibn Ezra and the Ramban both disagree over there and suggest that Per Chavdala really took place after Mamad Har Sinai, after the Torah was given, not prior to the Torah being given. Nevertheless, over there it says, they're at the foot of Har Sinai, and it says over there, Vayizbechu Zvachim Shlamim. They brought Korbanot Shlamim over there. But then it says, also right after Riyah Namiktiv, it says, Vayalu Olot. And they also brought Olot. So over there it says that the Narei Bnei Israel offered or brought Zivchei Shlamim, Vayalu Olot. And they also brought Korbanei Olah. So Beit Hillel says, okay, I saw Shlamim before Matan Torah. And as Rashi again explains over here, we're talking about the case where this really took place prior to Matan Torah. This all was Emukdam Mokhar Torah. And yet they're bringing Shlamim. So therefore I see Shlamim existed before Mamad Har Sinai. Where it says, in that same pasuk, it says Vayalu Olot. What type of proof is that? It says Shlamim and Olot. That means both of them happened prior to Mamad Har Sinai. Where it says, Kasavri Beit Hillel, Ola Sheikriv Yisrael Bamidbar, Ola Tamid Avai. So that Ola that we're talking about there was not an Olat Ri'iyah, but rather an Olat Tamid. It was the Korban Tamid. That's the Olot that we're bringing over there. Ubeit Shemai Savri, Ola Sheikriv Yisrael Bamidbar, Ola Ri'iyah Avai. They believe that the Ola that was brought at that Tekes, that ceremony at the bottom of Har Sinai was really the Olat Ri'iyah. What do you mean Olat Ri'iyah? Because over there, the end of that parak of Dalit in Mishpatim, it says, Vayechazu et Elokim, they saw God. So there was an idea of Ri'iyah over there. Like the Rego where we come up to be seen and to see God. So it's over there, Vayechazu et Elokim, they saw God. So you could say the Olot that were brought there are really an Olat Ri'iyah because they saw God. So that's Beit Shammai's argument, the Olot were Olot Ri'iyah, whereas Beit Hillel believes the Olot were Olat Tamid. And this is a broader machloket, which the Gemara is now going to discuss about the Olot that are there, whether they Olot Ri'iyah or Olot HaTamid. Amar Abaye. Beit Shammai, V'Rabbi Elazar, V'Rabbi Yishmael, Kulhu Svirluhu, Olah She'ikriv Yisrael B'Midbar, Olat Ri'iyah Abai. They all agree that the Olah that Bnei Yisrael brought in the Midbar were Olot Ri'iyah, just like Beit Shammai said now. Those Olot that were brought in Perek Chavdalet and Shmot, those were Olot Ri'iyah. Ubeit Hillel, V'Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Kulu Svirlu, Olah She'ikriv Yisrael B'Midbar, Olat Tamid Havai. They believe that it was an Olat Tamid. So you have three, Beit Shammai plus two Tanaim that say that it was an Olat Ri'iyah, and you have two Tanaim plus Beit Hillel who say that it was an Olat Tamid. Tosafot says, well, why did Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Elazar, or it's possibly the Girsa should be Rabbi Eliezer, why do they align themselves with Beit Shammai? Generally we say, Machlokes Beit Hillel Beit Shammai, that Beit Shammai in a Mishnah doesn't count for anything. It's not like it's an alternate opinion. It's as if it doesn't exist. You have to pass in like Beit Hillel. So if that's the case, why are they aligning themselves with Beit Shammai? So Tosafot says they must believe that it's not a Machlokes Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. And that Beit Hillel actually agrees that it is an Olat Ri'iyah, and that's why they say that. So that's their answer as to why they're siding with Beit Shammai, because they don't believe it's just Beit Shammai. Now the Gemara says, Beit Shammai had Amran. We know that Beit Shammai says it's Olat Ri'iyah because based on their argument here with Beit Hillel, that is their source for the fact that the Olat Ri'iyah took place prior to Matan Torah. Rabbi Yishmael, how do we know that Rabbi Yishmael says that? The time Rabbi Yishmael Omer, Klalot Nemru B'Sinai, the general principles of Halacha were given at Har Sinai, Upratot Ba'ol Moed, and the details were only given in Ol Moed. So therefore, when we're talking about the Korbanot over here, the Korbanot as a broad context were given, we saw that Mizbeach Adama you can make for yourself, and on that Mizbeach Adama you bring Olot Shlamim. That's the only information we have, that's in Perakof, that's before we get to Ol Moed. Once we get to Ol Moed, they get the details of how to do it. How do the Matanot Dam are done? How is the Efshet Minituach done? All the details of the Korbanot are only given to you at a much later time. If that's the case, the Gemara assumes that whatever was brought at Har Sinai was not an Olat Tamid, because they didn't have enough information to bring the Olat Tamid until they reached the Ol Moed. So whatever they brought then was certainly not an Olat Tamid, it must have been an Olat Ri'iyah. Rabbi Akiva Amer, Klalot Upratot Nemru B'Sinai, everything was given at Har Sinai, everything, the general and the details. B'Nishnu Ol Moed, they were repeated in Ol Moed. So all the things that we have in Sefer Vayikra, which says that Moshe is speaking to Hashem in Ol Moed, are repetition of what was said at Har Sinai already. They're not new Alochot. And then they were repeated a third time in what we read in the last number of weeks in Sefer Devarim, He repeated a third time for Bnei Yisrael. If you believe Ola Shikri B'Yisrael Bamidbar Ola Tamid Abai, if you believe that Ola that's mentioned in Parshat Mishpatim in Perachav Dalet is an Ola Tamid, Mi Ika Midi Demi Korolo Bai Hef Shevini Tuach Olo Sof Bai Hef Shevini Tuach. How could it be that you change the nature of the Korban Tamid? After you get the Lachot in Ol Moed, all of a sudden now you do have shape, you have to skin it, you have to flay it, and you have to cut it up into pieces and put it on the Mizbeach. Before that, you didn't have that rule, so you did it wherever the way you wanted, you just put it on whole, right onto the Mizbeach. How could it be that the Korban Tamid, which is the exact same Korban that we're talking about, one point was done this way, and then it changes the way we did it? Can't be that. Has to be they only started once they had all the information. If they only started once they had all the information, then it means it didn't start until much later. So that which is mentioned in Chav Dalet is not the Korban Tamid. What is that? Olat Riyah. So you asked me the same question there. Olat Riyah is also an Olat, and you don't know the rules. After we get the information Ol Moed, you have to do it the same way you would do the Olat Tamid. So how come by we don't say the same thing there? Oh, Olat Riyah, you did it this way, and then you're going to change the way you do it? So Tosafot says there's a difference. Because Hefshet Minituach and all the rules of the Olat are written by the Korban Tamid. Explicitly in the Parsha of the Tamid, it's mentioned there. So those halachot, you would not say that it would change. But Olat Riyah, where it's only learned out from the other olot, so over there we're not so worried about it changing. But is it specified in the Parsha of Korban Tamid? How could you argue that beforehand they didn't know about it, and they did it this way, and then they change in the middle? So that's how Tosafot differentiates between them. So that's why we see that Rabbi Ishmael believes that the Korban that was brought at Har Sinai was definitely Olat Riyah, because the Olat Tamid didn't start until they got the mitzvot in Ol Moed. You should just know that it's conceptually interesting that what was given at Har Sinai, what mitzvot were given at Har Sinai, and those mitzvot that are spoken about in Ol Moed, what is their status? Are they as if they're given at Har Sinai or not? The Ramban has a famous formulation there that a Shekhinah Shesharal Har Sinai, the Shekhinah that was on Har Sinai, moves from Har Sinai into the Ol Moed, and he sees the Ol Moed as being a continuation of the mitzvot that are said at Har Sinai. The Ramban believes that everything was said at Har Sinai, but that includes what was mentioned in the Ol Moed. Because what was said in the Ol Moed is the equivalent of being given on Har Sinai. After that point, no other mitzvot are given. All mitzvot are given then. The Ramban is going to run into problems. The Ramban is going to run into problems in Sefer Bamidbar. If you look at his introduction to Bamidbar, the introduction to Vayikra, you can see this, is that there's certain mitzvot that only appear in Sefer Bamidbar. They don't appear in Shmot, and they don't appear in Vayikra. According to Ramban, all mitzvot should have been done at that point. Same is true in Sefer Dvarim. We bump into some mitzvot that we never saw before. So Ramban has to deal with that, because he believes no mitzvot were given after that point in time. Everything was given at Har Sinai. So he has to answer those questions. He has a definitely, it's a difficulty in his shot, or in his explanation. But you see here the same thing that the Gemara is dealing with, the Rishonim are dealing with. What exactly is given at Har Sinai itself? And what is given at Ol Moed, and what's the relationship between them? Is something that's given at Ol Moed something that was already given at Har Sinai? It's a repetition. That's like Rabbi Akiva says over here. Or what's given at Ol Moed is the first time it's given, but Ol Moed has the same status as being given on Har Sinai. So now, Rabbi Lazar or Rabbi Eliezer, the Tanya, Olat Tamid, Hasuyaba Har Sinai. In the parsha of the Tamid, it says this is the Olat Tamid, Hasuyaba Har Sinai that was done at Har Sinai. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Masea Nemar with Sinai. Wait a minute, what was told at Sinai? Not that they brought the Korban at Sinai, but rather, how to do it was given at Sinai. But it itself was not brought. So what you thought was obvious, not so obvious, according to Rabbi Lezer, which he says that Asuya Bar Sinai is not that you actually brought the Korban at Mamad Har Sinai, it's just that you were taught how to do it. Our Tosafot over here says that the alternate is that they learned from what they did at Har Sinai that you require a kli. Because over there they used aganot, they used kelim for the blood. From that we learned to the din of the Korban Tamid that you must use a kli for the Kabbalat Adam and for the Zrikat Adam of the Korban Tamid. So we learn out of Aloha from what was done there, but that's not the Olat Tamid. That's not when the Olat Tamid was done. On the other hand, we have Rabbi Akiva Omer, Karva, Veshuvlo Paska, that we brought a Korban Tamid. That's what it means. Harasiyah Bar Harasiyah. It means they started bringing the Korban Tamid, and it never stopped. So, Elo Amayni Mikayim, what do I do with the Pasuk? The Pasuk in Amos that says, Hazvachim Umincha, Higashtim Liba Midbar Baim Shana Beit Yisrael? It's a rhetorical question. Did you bring Zvachim and Mincha to me in the Midbar for the 40 years? You were excommunicated. You had worshipped Avodah Zarah. I didn't watch your Korbanot. I didn't accept your Korbanot. Well, according to Rabbi Akiva, they were bringing a Korban to me the whole time. What do you mean? What's the Pasuk in Amos mean that they didn't bring Korbanot, that God didn't want any Korbanot? The truth is, you could answer it because it is Hazvachim u'mincha. Zvachim and mincha. Zvachim is shlamim, and mincha is a meal offering. It's not a olat tamid. Although the olat tamid does come with a mincha, so that might be the problem. But it's not so obvious from the puzzle they didn't bring it. But nevertheless, the Gemara answers. Shifto shalevi shloav du'avod azarah heini kivota. We had people who didn't worship the Egel, and they were the ones who brought the Korban Tamid. Shevet Levi took care of the Korban Tamid while they were in the Midbar, so that's how we answered the question. Beit Hillel Hadamran. Beit Hillel's position we already saw, that they believe that this Ola on Perek Chavdal and Shmot is an Ola Tamid. That's why you can't learn out Ola Triyah from before Sinai. Rabbi Akiva Hanami Damran. We just saw Rabbi Akiva's position that they actually brought the Ola Tamid at Har Sinai. That's what means Hasiyah Bar Sinai. They brought Har Sinai. They continue to bring it from then and forward. Rabbi Yosef Galili, the Tanya, Rabbi Yosef Galili, Omer, Shlosh mitzvot nitzav Yisrael balotam laregel. There are three mitzvot associated with the Aliyah laregel. This is what we spoke about in the introduction to the Masechta. Ri'iyah, the Olad Ri'iyah that you come when you come up to visit Hashem. Velo Yerahu Fainai Reikam, you can't come up empty-handed. Chagigah is the Shlomei Chagigah, because you have to be Chog, Lachog et Achag, you have to celebrate. That celebrate, the Gemara says, Shamei Chagigah. Ve'simcha, and you have Shamei Simcha, ve'samachta be'chagiyacha, that you have to be Simcha. Yesh b'riyah she'en b'shneihem, v'yesh b'chagigah she'en b'shneihem, v'yesh b'simcha she'en b'shneihem. Each one of these has a unique aspect that is not found by the others. Yesh b'riyah she'en b'shneihem. What's unique about riyah? Shriyah, ola kula legvah. That's an ola. The other two are shlamim. It's a shalmei chagigah and shalmei simcha. The riyah is an ola. Mashen k'en b'shneihem. Yesh b'chagigah mashen k'en b'shneihem. Chagigah is something unique. Shchagigah yesh na lifnei adibur. Mashen k'en b'shneihem. Chagigah came before the giving of the Torah. Ma she'ein kein b'shtem, which is not true by the others. The others were not given before Sinai. Who does he hold like? He holds like Beit Hillel, like Rabbi Akiva. The same thing, he's saying the Olah that was brought then was the Olah Tamid, not the Olah Triyah. Otherwise, he would have the Olah Triyah also prior to Mamad HaSinai. Yesh b'simcha, ma she'ein b'shtem. And also by simcha, you have something that's not by others. Shasimcha noeg b'anashim u'b'nashim. Simcha applies to men and women. Women are obligated in simcha, or at least their husbands are obligated to ensure that they are a sameach. Mashein b'shtehem. They are pturot from the shamei chagiga and the olot riyah, because that's a mitzvah to say shazman grama. And we don't have a particular riboy to say that they are chayavot. We did have a havamina that they're chayavot from hakel, but then we had a miut in the puzzle that tells us that they're not included from that. So the mitzvah to say shazman grama, they are pturot. So that's different about the shamei simcha versus the other two. So you see here clearly that Rabbi Yosef Galili also believes that the Olah that was brought at Har Sinai was an Olah Tamid and not an Olah Riyah. The interesting thing about this is that they all believe that it's Olah Tamid Hasuyah by Har Sinai. That was done at Har Sinai, and the Olah was brought at that point at Korban Tamid. According to the way that we're laying out the Gemara, it was actually brought on the 5th of Sivan prior to the actual Mamad Har Sinai. It's not Olah Tamid Hasuyah by Har Sinai. It wasn't done at Mamad. Oh, very good. So that's what it said. It doesn't mean, Hasuyah b'Har Sinai doesn't mean after Matan Torah or at Matan Torah. It means b'Har Sinai. It was done at Har Sinai. They were at Har Sinai. It just happened to be. It was prior to Matan Torah. Now, Rabbi Shmuel, my time will come up late to Beit Shammai. Rabbi Shmuel, before you said, definitely holds like Beit Shammai that it's an Olat Riyah. Why? Because you see, Isak adatcha Olat shikru v'Yisro b'midbar, Olat tamid avai. Because if you think that the Olat that B'nai Yisrael brought in the midbar, I mean the one in Perek Chavdal and Shmot, was not tamid avai, how could it be that the first time they brought the Korban Tamid didn't require flaying and quartering? And afterwards it did require that. So Mar says, why? That's not a good question. You know why? He believes that the Ola that they brought was an Ola Tamid. He had no problem with that change. The Tanya, Rabbi Yosef Galili Omer, Ola shikru v'yisoma midbarina tuna evshev nituach. Lefi she'en evshev nituach, elam o'moed ve'elech. The only time they got that mitzvah in o'moed. So until they got it in o'moed, they did whatever they did as in terms of an Ola. They didn't do evshev nituach. That's not a problem. Marasami v'kan Rabbi Shmuel. Drop Rabbi Shmuel from the list. You're right. Just because Rabbi Shmuel said that, it's not a proof. The fact that he says the mitzvah came in o'moed is not a proof that the Ola that they brought before was not an Ola Tamid, because maybe it did change. We don't have a problem with that. That's what Rabbi Yosef Galili says is, we're okay with something changing after a certain period of time. Abai Rav Chista, Haikra Hechiktiv, please explain to me this pasuk. Vayishlach and Ne'arei Bnei Yisrael, Vayelu Olot, the word Vasim does not exist there, Vayizbuchuz Vachim Shalmim LaShem Parim. That is the pasuk. The Gemara's question is what the word kvasim in there. It says, Vayishlach et narei bnei Yisrael vayalu olot. Now, what were the olot? The Gemara says, does it mean vayalu olot kvasim? They brought olot that were kvasim. Vayizbuchuz vachim shlamim l'ashem parim. And these vachim, these shlamim, were made out of parim. Or, tilma idiv idiv parim avu. Maybe parim is modifying both of them. And the way you would read it is, Vayishlach et narei bnei Yisrael vayalu olot. Vayizbuchuz zivchei shlamim l'ashem parim. Parim is telling you both the olot and the shlamim. So the mayin nafkamina. Why does it make a difference? Now there's, who's the question on? Let's start with that. Who's the question on? The question is definitely on Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai, who says that the ulah that they brought at Har Sinai was not the ulah to Tamid, then that certainly is a question as to whether it was a par or a kibbis. They're both valid ulot. Which ulah did you bring in terms of the ulah to Riyah? So it's a valid question. According to Beit Hillel, it might depend. Is it a valid question or not? Because according to Beit Hillel, it was an ulah Tamid. The tamid only comes as a keves, does not come as a par. Though Tosafot suggests over here that the question could still apply to Beit Hillel because we just said, according to Rabbi Yosef Galili, right, things changed. So that maybe prior to Ol Moed, you could bring your olat tamid with a par. After we got the mitzvah in Ol Moed, it changed into a keves, and you only bring it as a keves. Then the suggestion of Tosafot is the question equally applies to Beit Hillel. You could argue that the question is only according to Beit Shammai, and then you wouldn't have this issue, but Tosafot suggests that it applies to both of them. Now, which way do you read it? That's the Gemara's question. Is Parim modifying or not modifying? The Gemara says, what's the nafkamina? Might have a hava. That's historical. Who cares, in a sense, what is the halachic ramification of this if it's just a historical statement? It doesn't apply today. It doesn't matter today. Olot, or the olat tamid is brought from kvasim. Olat riyah, you can bring from Parim or kvasim. What does it make a difference? The Gemara says, one difference is the main afkamina, the marzutra amar, the pisuk tamim. Marzutra says, for the trop. How do you read the pasuk? That makes a difference. Right. Exactly. So Rashi says, vayishlach enarei b'nei Yisrael vayalu olot. If under the word olot, you have a stop, a tam that means a stop, which either it's nachto, which is a super stop, or is a kev katon, which would be a smaller stop, like more like a comma than a semicolon or a period, but both of those would indicate vayalu olot, period. And then the next part of the statement is not modifying it. And that would mean the olot came from probably kvasim. And then, parim. Or, if you put under the word olot, another trop, like a tvir or a revia, something that moves it forward, is a continuous type of trop that makes it into one sentence, then the parim would be modifying the olot as well. So the question is, what is the trop there? What's the proper trop underneath it? Our Torah, the way that we have it, it's an etnachta, under the word olot. Since there's etnacht under the word olot, that would mean that the olot are not being modified by the parim, according to Rashi. That brings up the question, the Gemara in Yoma, that says that chamesh mikraot ein lehem achreya. We have five psukim there that we have no way to understand which way to read them. Because again, in the Torah that doesn't have trop and doesn't have nekudot, it's not clear if the word belongs to the before or to the afterwards. The question is, today we have the pisuk tamim, we have the trop. And the trop really determines which way it would be read. It's almost defined. So some suggest that the question about these psukim only existed prior to the time of Ezra when the trop was brought in. Once the trop was brought in, we had the answer to the question, at least with the number of them, at least with four out of five of them, we have an answer. Others suggest that it remains a question. Pisuk tamim is just our guess at what it should be, but it's not definitive that that is the only way to read it. There might be another way to read it. Right, that's a question about the Pisuk Tamim. Is the Misorah the Pisuk Tamim themselves? Or is the Misorah the way that he thought the explanation of the Pasuk was, and therefore he put the Pisuk Tamim based right on what he thought the explanation was? But there's an argument about the explanation, and he took one of the sides, or he took a position there. It's not so clear. Historically, it seems like the Pisuk Tamim came in much later than the time of Ezra. The Rishonim, like the Ritva, the Rosh, believed that Pisuk Tamim was put in by Ezra. But historically, it's not clear that they had the Pisuk Tamim, especially based on that Gemara in Yoma. The Pisuk Tamim may have been a much later date. So it's not so clear, but some of the Rishonim believe it came from the time of Ezra. The other possibility is that the Gemara here is also not concluding. It's telling you that Pisuk Tamim is the nafkamina, but we don't know. It's not an answer like, oh yeah, we know, now we have the Pisuk Tamim. It's not definitive. It's just that Pisuk Tamim. And as Tosafot points over here, our Gemara is different than those Shein Lehem Achreya. Because in our Gemara, you can actually say both answers and it won't matter. No matter which way you read it, it really doesn't make a big difference. The reason is because, first of all, it's historical. And number two is we're going to see that even though it has a nafkamina, you can deal with that nafkamina, which is the second thing here. which is the other possibility. Marzutra said it was Pisuk Tamim, Ravacha Breit Ravavar, Amar Lo Mer, Harei Alai Ola. Person who says, I want to bring an Ola as a Neder, Kolashi Kiri Shalba Midbar, like the one they brought at Arsinai. My, what does he bring? Parimavu or Kvasimavu? Which one is it? Teiku, we don't know. The fact that Gemara here leaves it as a Teiku is interesting, because we have the Pisuk Tamim that puts an Etnachta under the word Olot, which would indicate that there is a Echreya, that it was Kvasim and not Parim. Yet the second answer says, no, that it's a question mark. And that's what might be the question over here. You can accomplish both of them without hurting the meaning of the Pasuk. Person says that makes a neder like this, let him just bring a par and a kevis, and he's going to be yotzei no matter what. I mean that there is a solution to the problem by doing both of them. And the other psukim in the Gemara and Yoma, the Chein Lamechreya, they are mutually exclusive explanations. If you explain it one way, you cannot explain it the other way because they're mutually exclusive. So over there, it's much more problematic. Over here in our Gemara, the Gemara doesn't bring this as a pasuk. There the Gemara asks from our pasuk and doesn't care about it because Ein Lamechreya, it doesn't matter here. Even if you can't be Mechreya, you could still deal with the safek. You can deal with the unknown. But in the other cases, you can't deal with the unknown because the unknown has an afkamina that is mutually exclusive as opposed to here. Again, Pisuk Tamim, depending on how you view the Pisuk Tamim. Those Rishonim over there that believe the Pisuk Tamim answered our question, it also answers our question over here. According to those that don't think the Pisuk Tamim were just a guess or best guess at it, then you still have the same problem, and the same would be true over here. Okay, we'll stop over here. Two lines from the bottom.